It's convenient for me to use the mouse sitting down. So, can you all hear me? Okay. Good. My name is Thomas Provencelik. I'm an American living in Hong Kong and Berlin. Okay. And the title of my talk is QED, the Fourth Mode of Heat Transfer. We all know heat transfer proceeds by three modes: conduction, radiation, and convection. However, I like to propose QED is the fourth mode of heat transfer. And QED here will be quantum electrodynamics. Background: I was involved in nanostructures, but I got involved in nanocoatings because of work done at Oregon State University about 4 years ago. And what they did, they put zinc oxide nanocoating on aluminum, and they improved the BHT 4 to 10 times. And BHT stands for boiling heat transfer. Maybe some of you have read this work. Recently in Korea, graphene on silicon dioxide improved the BHT more than 2 times. Okay? It's kind of a background. Mechanism. In nanocoatings, what I'm proposing is the QED converts heat into the surface to EM radiation because QM precludes conservation of the heat by an increase in temperature. And here, EM will be electromagnetic, and QM quantum mechanics. QED heat transfer. Here I show a substrate, heat coming in. You put a coating on, a macro coating, 5, 10, 20 microns. All right. What you're going to find is a temperature increase, and you all know the only way you can get rid of that heat is by natural convection. However, if you put a nano coating on, less than 100 nanometers, it's a brand new ball game. There's no temperature increase, and what happens is you're going to emit QED radiation. This is a proposal, right? I'm trying to show you that this is correct. So what a nanocoating does is conserves the heat without a temperature increase, and it creates high frequency QED radiation, and this bypasses, the high frequency simply bypasses the natural convection and enhances the heat transfer. You can treat this as a hypothesis. Theory: heat capacity of the atom, EM confinement, and QED radiation. Heat capacity of the atom. Here you see the Planck energy of the atom in electron volts versus wavelength in microns, and from the nanoscale way over here to the macro scale. Now KT is the energy of the atom at room temperature, 0.258 electron volts. And you can see classical physics assumes the same heat capacity all the way across from the macro to the nanoscale. And in programs like molecular dynamics, COMSOL, ANSYS, all those finite element programs make exactly the same assumption. Quantum mechanics differs. Here you see the Planck law, about a century old now, as you all know. And if you plot that out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you get this red curve, and you can see down to maybe around 100 microns, if you wish, you can argue the classical physics and quantum mechanics, the atom has the same heat capacity. However, below that, you can see it drops off and it basically vanishes. Okay. 100 years old. And by quantum mechanics, KT goes to zero at the nanoscale. Okay. How about classical physics? Well, you go back to 1912, about 6 years after Planck did his work, and Debye, when he did his phonon theory, assumed that H nu was equal to KT. This is where he started. And if you look at this picture, you can see he was out here in the long wavelength region. It's perfectly valid there. So what's the problem? Well, today, phonons are used in nanostructures, way over here. Okay? How about Teller and Metropolis? You all know about these people. In the 1950s, they did an MD simulation, electrodynamic simulation, and they used periodic boundaries. It was a two-dimensional plate, and they assumed PVC. And, of course, in the submicron element they were using for their model, PVC, periodic boundary conditions, effectively, they were analyzing the continuum, and the continuum is valid at long wavelengths. But today, MD is used in discrete nanostructures, and I have done a lot of work on, you'll find it on the web, in regard to that. They assume MD is applicable out here, when in fact you can see it's not. So device phonons and discrete MD has to be invalid at the nanoscale by this theory, by this hypothesis. EM confinement. How do you confine the atom? You've got to confine it into the nanoscale. How do you do that? Well, nanostructures have a high surface-to-volume ratio. You all know this. And surface absorption places the interior atoms under high electromagnetic confinement, but quantum mechanics precludes any temperature increase. So then QED comes along and conserves that energy, that trapped energy, to EM radiation. Here I try to show that graphically or pictorially. Here's a body, a nanocoating, and surroundings. Heat comes into the nanocoating. It goes into the surface. So these interior atoms in here are instantaneously placed under high electromagnetic confinement because this dimension is nanoscale. So temperature cannot change. So how does this conserve? Well, QED comes along, and this thickness D, if you take that to be D, and this being a standard width, the half wavelength of that standing wave is equal to the thickness. And of course, since you use the energy in the surface to create the QED radiation, there's no longer any electromagnetic confinement, right? And the radiation comes on. Aha, but some will go back into the body, right? But again, it's going to be converted into heat, absorbed, goes into heat, and that heat will again try to go through the coating. So effectively, what this says is QED, the efficiency approaches 100%. And with relation to LEDs, which you'll see coming up, I'll be making contrast with, LEDs stand for light-emitting diodes. You all know this. So QED, and I'm not using Feynman's diagrams here, there's no need for that. Basically, if you have a quantum mechanical box with sides separated by distance d, and you put energy into that box, you're going to create radiation of lambda over 2 equal to d. Pike made this assumption 100 years ago. Not in this context, but the same idea. The standing wave. And the equations are simple. F is the frequency of the radiation, C is the velocity of light, N is the refractive index of the coating, lambda is the wavelength. The lambda, it has to be equal to 2D, as I just pointed out. And here, the energy of that radiation, the Planck energy of the radiation, is Planck's constant, H times the frequency of. QED radiation emission. Well, here I show the QED radiation coming off of the coating in microns, the wavelength. And you can see here's the extreme ultraviolet, visible, and infrared. And on the abscissa is the coating thickness in nanometers. Now, let's say I wanted to produce UVC radiation for disinfecting water, let's say. So I have to have 254 nanometers. I come up here, and here is roughly 254. I come over, and if I want to use zinc oxide, I come over here, I drop down. I need about 50 nanometers of zinc oxide. Why SZ here is yttrium and zirconia. It's used in turbine blades, and I'll be coming up with that. Now, applications: thin films, nanoelectronics, turbine blades, EUV lithography, water purification, and shockwaves. I'm going to briefly address each of these in relation to the QED. Thin films: cooling by this radiation in films really began about 50 years ago by Kellerman. And here I show a summary of that work. This is thermal conductivity versus film thickness. And here's Kellerman's work, who was one of the first. And they plotted this out. And what they found is, to balance the heat, they had to come up with a reduced conductivity as the film thickness is reduced. You all, I'm sure, have seen this data. But the data has been misinterpreted. There's no reduced thermal conductivity. The heat lost by QED radiation beyond the UV was not included in the thin film heat balance. They didn't include what I'm talking about. So therefore, they came to this conclusion. If you include that radiation in the balance, you'll find the conductivity remains at bulk. And the exclusion of QED radiation from the heat balance is understandable. These people knew what they were doing 50 years ago. But again, you wouldn't see the UV. Normally this would not be expected. Nanoelectronics. The QED radiation will cool nanoelectronics. Naturally, all you've got to do is make the circuit elements submicron. You do that, you're going to get rid of all the hot spots. Quantum mechanics requires the heat capacity of the atom to vanish. That means that the Joule heat cannot produce hot spots. Just repeating what I just said. But unfortunately, like life goes, you solve one problem, you create another one. And that's the way it is. But what you're going to find is you're going to create charge inside the circuit elements. And this leads to 1 over F noise, which can degrade the electronics, which is what you're trying to do. Here I show a summary of that work. Here's the Planck energy. I take it to be ace nu over 2 in D. And I take the size to be the half wavelength of the radiation. And there are three areas here. This is what I call the MEMS, M-E-M-S. In this region, you're going to find hot spots. If you use the Fourier equation incorrectly, you'll get hot spots. But if you're not going to get any 1 over F noise. This is basically where we are in the macro scale. At the other extreme, you have NIMS, and there you're going to find no hot spots, but you're going to get the 1 over F noise. So the optimum is somewhere in between, depending on the design. And nanoelectronics operating in a clean room environment, you're not going to foul the coating. Therefore, it's a very good application for thin film. Turbine blades. I missed this talk earlier. I went to another meeting, but the gas turbine blades are coated with TBC comprising nanograins to insulate the blade from the hot combustor gases. You probably all know that. And TBC stands for thermal boundary coating. Okay? And here I show a summary of calculations now of thermal conductivity, and they've shown here, this is with the yttrium zirconia that I mentioned earlier, and depending on the size of the grain, you can get reduced conductivity. I'm sure you all know this. But this was calculated with phonon theory, so you can keep that in the back of your head. So nanocoatings do not insulate the blade. They simply radiate the heat to the surrounding. And reductions in thermal conductivity with nanograins is based on phonon scattering that I just mentioned, and that's somewhat questionable at the nanoscale. And the turbine blade QED coatings differ from those in nanoelectronics because in the turbine blades, it's almost impossible to keep the coatings clean with all the combustor gases. And I'll be coming back to this with another approach. But here I talk about EUV lithography. And I don't know if you follow this, but in Moore's Law, they're trying to make chips with 13.5 nanometer lithography, and this is what is called LPP lithography. And LPP stands for laser-produced plasma. And based on classical physics, again, I throw that up, LPP requires high temperatures to create the EUV light. And this is done using CO2 lasers, and they focus by large mirrors. Here's what I mean. Here's a CO2 laser. Here's a mirror, about a meter in diameter, central hole. Here's a target, maybe tin, metal tin. You vaporize that, through all the radiation comes off, right? And then it's filtered and combined into a series of complicated mirrors, and so on and so forth. And this is the wafer stage. This is where you do the etching of the chip. And the total light emission is less than 1%. This is an extremely inefficient way, but you'll see these are very expensive devices. But QED lithography is far simpler. If you try to do the same job with QED, you're going to find it's very easy. And QED uses a small spherical glass lens provided on the front surface with a nanoscale zinc oxide coating to convert heat into a EUV light source. Lasers are not required. Here's what I mean. Here you see a spherical lens. You can hold it in your hand. You put a nano coating on the front surface of zinc oxide. The back surface, you put a heater. The heat again comes through. The same physics applies, and you create a focal point here where you do the etching. And for QED radiation, you have to hold this relationship. Lambda is equal to 2ND, and for zinc oxide, N is equal to 2.5. So all you need is coatings less than 3 nanometers, and you'll have EUV less than 15 nanometers. And this, I think, as you can see, there won't be coherency, but neither is LPP spectra coherent. But this is a lot easier to do than LPP. Water disinfection. This is one of my favorites. Handheld bowls are provided with nanoscale zinc oxide coatings, and I've shown that to a few people here now, and I to produce UVC from body heat. If you simply hold the coating in your hand, or the bowl in your hand, with water, the heat from the hand should disinfect the water. And there's no electricity required now. This is body heat. And the application is West Africa. They don't have electricity either, but they have body heat. So this is what I mean. Okay? You hold that heat from the hand, goes through the bowl, the coating is here, and the UVC comes out of the surface. Of course, how does that happen? But the LEDs and the UVC now are thought to provide the future disinfection of drinking water. All the publicity predicts this. However, LEDs still require electricity and cannot achieve the 100% efficiency of QED disinfection. They're only around 1 to 3% efficient in the UVC. Now, they're trying to improve that. And then similar to nano-coated glaze, getting back to the glaze again, nano-coatings on drinking bowls are likely to rub off. You can't expect people in West Africa not to rub it off when they clean the bowl. Right? So, what I'm proposing here is molding 50 nanometer zinc oxide nanoparticles into a 100 micron Teflon composite. It's more practical. It's not as efficient as the coating, but it's much more practical for West Africa. And this leads you to throw back to the TBC on turbine blades. The TBC on turbine blades, if you look at the picture I showed earlier, the nanograins improve reducing the conductivity. Well, each of those nanograins, if they are the grain boundaries should form a continuum, and any heat that goes into those grains will be emitted. Now, of course, for the water disinfection, if you put UV radiation in Teflon, it's transparent. But if you do that with turbine blades, you're going to get a high temperature material which is transparent in the UV. There's some problems, but it should be able to be worked on. Shockwaves. For many years now, shock waves are thought to heat gases from 1,000 to 10,000 Kelvin to study gas molecules at high temperature. And the temperatures are calculated because they can't measure any more today than they did 40 years ago. The shock thicknesses are infinitesimally small. You all know that. And this is the equation that you use in undergraduate school when you calculate the temperature of a shock wave. You know this equation. And this side is the shock wave thickness. And from that you can predict what the thickness of the shock wave is. But you see, what they're doing today, they're using spectroscopy to measure the frequency of gas molecules, and then they relate that to temperature. But with QED radiation emitted from the shock thicknesses, the shock wave thicknesses are inferred from the half UV wavelength. Here's what I mean. Here you see the radiation coming out. There's no high temperatures, and standing waves are created. If you measure the frequency of the radiation coming off of here, you can estimate the shock wave thickness. Now, in the final, I think I have a little time. How can I impress upon you the importance of quantum mechanics instead of classical physics and nanotechnology? Okay, this is what I'd like to try to show you. And I want to start with one which I think is very powerful, nanoparticle combustion and quantum versus statistical mechanics. This one not so important. This one is very important. So nanoparticle combustion, if you add carbon nanoparticles in a molten aluminum bath in air, an oxygen environment, and cool to ambient and take SEM micrographs, this is what you'll see. Here is the aluminum in gray and the carbon nanoparticles in black. Okay? And you have to ask the question, the carbon nanoparticles did not combust. Why is that? At 600 degrees, they should have gone, disappeared. They should not have been in the SEM. And of course, you know the carbon plus oxygen in an oxygen environment will produce CO2. They should have disappeared. If I ask you what happens when you drop nanoparticles from your hand into a molten vat, I think all you will say, it'll just combust, but it didn't. And you repeat this for micron size now, 10, 20 micron size particles, what you find, they don't find any nanoparticles in the SEM. So what this suggests is complete nanoparticle combustion. And tensile tests show the nanoparticles enhance mechanical properties. You put carbon nanoparticles in aluminum, you get 10-20% improvement in the stress-strain curve. And carbon, then, one idea was to explain the high good properties, the carbon was assumed to enhance the aluminum bond. Somehow, people thought that was the reason. But density functional theory disproves that. And the quantum mechanical interpretation I'd like to throw out to you, the nanoparticles do not have heat capacity. But the micron-sized ones do, and you can even explain the macrocarbon increases in temperature, it starts to combust. It combusts and combusts, and down to, let's say, a nanoparticle size, and it will also combust because it's at high temperatures. And the bottom line here is temperature changes do not occur in nanoparticles. You won't find this in classical physics, no matter how hard you try. Okay, another comparison, quantum versus statistical mechanics. Microdynamic simulations show very high pressures. Tens of thousands of atmospheres are produced in nanotubes, even if the tubes are open at the ends to atmospheric pressure. When I heard about this, I began to look at it because it didn't make sense. And the pressure that was computed in the MD simulations are shown here. This is KT, the energy of the atom. And here's an exponent, log of the exponent, KT. And by quantum mechanics, atoms and nanoparticles are under high electromagnetic confinement. There's very small diameters of the atoms. Any molecules in there are under high electromagnetic confinement. the heat capacity vanishes, and that requires the pressure P to also vanish. You can see that from the equation. If you take KC to zero, the pressure will go to zero. And any enhancing chemistry in nanotubes is really caused by EUV radiation, like I showed you earlier. And here's a comparison. This is quantum mechanics, EUV radiation. This is statistical mechanics, classical physics. And I don't think this one is possible. Conclusion, QED is the fourth mode of heat transfer, but only in nanostructures. If you apply this to macrostructures, you still can do it, but you'll find you won't get the electromagnetic confinement and it won't work. Well, that's all I have. This is my email address and home page. If you go on my home page, you'll see many applications of QED heat transfer. You can look at that. Thank you very much. No questions? I know you people were using classical physics. Because I did too up until I began to look at nanotechnology.
I think there's a question here.
Yeah.
Question? Okay. I was talking about equilibrium
properties or
non equilibrium properties.
Once again?
I was talking about equilibrium properties or non equilibrium properties. Equilibrium
or non-equilibrium? Oh, I don't know. What is it? You put a nanoparticle in a aluminum bath. I don't know what that is. It's probably a non-equilibrium.
It uses the temperature. The temperature is defined as a logarithm of the thermodynamic probability. It is combined with the entropy and it is combined with the capacity. In the equilibrium thermodynamics. Maybe you have an inversion of the population in your theory.
No, I basically I assume the Planck law. And the not too long ago I was in Xi'an, China, and they questioned, but the only way you can argue against this, and I don't know if this is equilibrium or non-equilibrium, I just assume the Planck law. Now, I think that's equilibrium, the way Planck formulated it. But, so therefore, to answer your question, I don't think it matters, but probably it would be an equilibrium argument because of Planck. In effect, I assume the Planck law, nothing more.
The effect you see, the explanation can be different.
Huh?
The effect you see, of course, but the explanation could be different.
Well, yeah, there may be, what I'm proposing, there may be another reason, but I don't know what it is. You would have to present another alternative argument. I don't. The heat capacity of the atom is a property of the atom. I don't know how more what to say. And it doesn't exist in nanoparticles because the nanoparticle was placed under electromagnetic confinement. Then Planck tells us there's no heat capacity. I don't know what you call that.
That's states. Ground states, excited states, and so on.
Yes.
The states are populated according to, for instance, some quantum mechanical distribution. The question is this correct equilibrium population?
I think it is. In the same way that Planck derived the radiation equation in the first place. He didn't do anything.
Like a laser, that's also an inversion of the population.
I was asked the question, not here or some other place, but if there's no heat capacity of the atom, how do you can explain the pressure in a balloon? And everyone's thinking macroscopic balloons. In the macroscopic balloons, there is heat capacity.
Yes.
But in nano balloons, there isn't. And that's the crucial argument here as the nano scale. And again, if you if you go through what I've presented, you can check on the web. I've done many applications of the same theory. Again, not knowing what is the correct theory, I try applying it across the board, and it seems to work. It seems to work the QED heat transfer is probably common. Paul, yeah. Nanofluids?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can we say the nanofluids are the force
model heat transfer? I don't hear very well, and there's no microphones here.
Can we name the term nanofluids? Can we name the term nanofluid for the fourth mode of heat transfer?
In nanofluids?
Yes.
Yeah. In nanofluids, all the molecules are ionized. When they start through, the molecule will ionize, but because the space is very small, it recombines. So it's under a continual process, ionization, recombination. And you don't see that when you do the MD simulation. But that's really what's going on. So when the molecules come out, they look normal, right? But that's not what happened. They predict flows, I forget now, maybe 100 times greater than that by classical physics, right? You know that. The reason for that, I think, is that the atoms are all, as they go through, they're all ionized, so you have repulsion. They're really a bunch of atoms loosely connected together, and they just move through very high velocity. I don't know if that really answers, but basically the same idea. And
is QED limited to any specific material or any material?
No. This is Feynman. This is a simplified version of Feynman. Feynman's quantum electrodynamics is where you should start. But Feynman, in my opinion, he slipped off into analytical oblivion with his Feynman diagrams, which very few people understand. But the physics, if you have a quantum mechanical box and you put energy into it, you're going to create photons. You're going to create QED radiation. And it will depend on the distance between the walls of the cavity, which is what Planck assumed a long time ago.
It depends on the temperature of the substrate, or
well, the rate, the energy you put in there. I mean, it's really independent of temperature. Now that you mention it,
the enhancement of the transfer.
This is non-thermal radiation. Planck, when he did his work, he talked about thermal radiation. Okay. So there is a difference. This energy occurs without temperature increase. It can't, because the atoms that are producing it have no thermal heat capacity.
Thank you.
It's a difficult subject, and I apologize if I stepped on your toes here and there, because I know you're all in classical physics. But I personally think there's a new approach coming down the path. It's called quantum mechanics, and it's 100 years old. If Planck would have made his paper a few years ago, I wouldn't be so confident. But it's been sitting around for 100 years. I think the argument is...
One question. You talk about disinfecting water just by putting the bowl and it's in contact coating.
Yeah.
How hot does the water get? How does it disinfect?
There's no. it's disinfected because the, and I wrote that equation down, I don't want to go look for it again, but lambda is equal to 2nd, you probably remember, okay? N is the refractive index of the coating. For zinc oxide, it's 2.5. And 2 times 2.5 is 5. And 5 times 50 is 250. That's 246 nanometers. So it's UVC that's doing the... And this is... this. There's no temperature associated with that.
There are no more questions, please. I mean, thank you for that. Okay, we move on now to four PhD candidates and presentations. And the first presentation is by Katrin Yasha Habib.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, let me thank Lord for coming here today.
You want me to go now, Stanley, or the official presentation?
Today, I'm going to talk about the effect of stress oxidation and interfacial coupling on stress polymers and on properties of aluminum and hydrogen as a uniformity material. In this presentation, I will focus on four major issues. First of all, I will discuss the definition of surface thermal resonance. After that, I will introduce plasmonic materials and nanostructures. Especially, I mean plasmonic materials. Then, finally, I will talk about plasma resonance properties of aluminum nanoparticles that we have worked. Surface plasma resonance is collective oscillation of electron band conduction of surface metallic nanoparticles. When metallic nanoparticles then incident electromagnetic waves in front of the polarization of particles